Now let me go to the second problem in the play, which is in the title. Title of the play. It's become a proverbial phrase. Quite apart from the play, people who don't know Shakespeare wrote a play by this title know the phrase. Much Ado About Nothing. Now, in one sense, it's a perfect title for this play because the central episode, the central accusation, hero has been untrue, doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. It's nothing. It's not true. It was made up. It's a lie. It's not there. But by gum, a lot happens because of that nothing that never took place. And indeed, it's that nothing that seems to unleash the chaos that threatens to destroy the entire social order and everyone's happiness. Okay? So it is Much Ado. It's about nothing, but that can be serious business. There's a second reason. There's a pun in the title. We say Much Ado About Nothing. In Shakespeare's time, the title would have been pronounced Much Ado About Noting. 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 Noting, in Shakespeare's day, meant eavesdropping. Listening in on conversations that you were not meant to hear, or that were not directed directly at you. And if you think back over this play, it happens over and over and over and over again that people are listening in and hearing things and either misunderstanding them, believing them falsely, believing them correctly, leading to great good, but there is a whole lot of eavesdropping going on, and indeed, there is much ado throughout the play about much ado about noting. We've got at the very beginning, Don John's friend Baraccio has heard that the prince is going to woo Hero and then give her to Claudio. His first plot is, let's tell Claudio that the prince is wooing for himself and going to keep her. And he does it. But of course, what he does is he says it in Claudio's ear as Claudio pretends to be Benedict. Okay? We have the two great scenes, the two of the greatest comic scenes ever written. Benedict eavesdropping and overhearing. Now, it's a setup, but he's eavesdropping and overhearing the fact that Beatrice loves him. The same thing is done with the ladies to Beatrice. And out of it comes a great good. The love match actually begins. We have the watch, those poor incompetent fools, given instructions by dear Dogberry, who doesn't have a brain in his head, to quote Rosalind and As You Like It, not a brain to throw at a dog. Okay? It's just nothing there, vacant space, much ado about nothing. Okay? But he's very sweet. He's quite wonderful. He gives the watch the orders, as far as one can understand what he's saying. And they're there and eavesdrop and hear Baraccio say what it is that's gone on that night. And of course, the very fact that the men then go and think they see something, it's eavesdropping. They're not seeing at all what they think they're seeing. Because Don John has told them a lie, and they are seeing a lie, not what's really there. All the way through this play at every point. Now, what is Shakespeare talking about? It's this. If you live in a social order, this will come as a surprise to you. People talk. And they talk about each other. And they tend to gossip. And they tend to pass stories around. I know that doesn't happen here. Okay? But outside these walls in the world at large, people actually tend occasionally to talk about each other and share stories about each other. And sometimes other people listen in and get it wrong. And sometimes they listen in and get it right. And how do you know which is which? How can you tell? The play is about the difficulty of living among other people and even getting your facts right. Or know what's actually going on with other people when everybody's talking. Everybody's sharing stories. Everybody's gossiping. Everybody's over here. Did you hear what they said at the next table? No, it can't be true. Yes, I heard it. They said, oh, don't tell anyone. No, I won't tell anyone. Did you hear what? Okay. It's an enormous social problem. It's huge. It's gone on since the dawn of time. Okay, just constant. It's constant. It's human. We talk. We tend to talk. Which leads us to another problem in the play, which is this. Words are not just one thing. Words are the way we communicate. Okay? But words are... at the lowest end, often very difficult to grasp. Poor Dogberry. He was born with the ability to use language, but it's been severely hindered in significant ways. Okay. Thou shalt be condemned into everlasting redemption for this. He means perdition, but it's sort of, can't quite keep those things clear. The only one that he's absolutely clear on is that he's been called an ass. And he keeps repeating it. Or the wonderful thing where he brings the ne'er-do-wells in and is accusing them and says, well, firstly, thirdly, finally, sixthly. I mean, it's just, can't even use number words and numbers sequentially. So it's a problem in that many people have deficient verbal skills. Okay? Then we have the problem of language that is so overblown. Claudio's romantic talking when he first comes in and falls in love with Hero. He's been to war, war is done, it's time to love. And he's talking excessively about his love for him. Now, Benedict is right in one sense. It's sort of zing, zing, please knock a little air out of this balloon. It's a little too much, zing, zing. And then he proves it. Because he does not know Hero well enough. If he knew her fully, if he was more realistic and down to earth, he wouldn't be filled with gigantic romantic concepts that can easily be betrayed by Don John. Language can be overblown and we can come to believe our own language and it can be difficulty. At the core of the play, language can be weaponry. Beatrice and Benedict. Words are to fire at the other person, okay? Or thrust at the other. Benedict, complaining about her, says she speaks poignards. She doesn't talk, she just keeps stabbing me. And it is the fact that words can be used as weapons that have kept them, that's kept them apart in a way. It's been part of the difficulty. But please notice, and this is the beauty of it, he transforms that insulting back and forth until finally he's trying to write poetry. I realize he's just no good at it. He can't rhyme. But the very attempt suggests he is trying to put these feelings into a coherent order because a sonnet is a very difficult thing to put down. 14 lines of rhymed iambic pentameter to express your love. Oh, that's tough. That's tough. And it means you can't just go all over the place. It's very restrictive. It's very tough. And at the end, when we find out each has written a sonnet to the other, about the other and the love, it's okay. Even if his isn't very good, we're sure hers is better. Even if his isn't very good, still he's done it. And then he says, I love it. Well, here are our own hands against our hearts. We still don't like each other. But the words now say we do, so what can we do? I guess we'll get married. It's just wonderful. Clever wit that now binds them together rather than separating them, okay? Words are hugely important in this play on many different levels. It is not accidental that the penance Leonardo puts on young Claudio, you go to her tomb and make public how you wronged her. And when he does, he puts it down as a poem and a song. Okay? A poem and a song. So let's look now at the way in which Claudio does his penance. And this is penance imposed by the father of the girl he thinks he has killed. And this is what he is ordered to do by her father in order to be forgiven. Okay? In order to be forgiven. This is Act 5, Scene 3. It's on page 75 in this edition. Act 5, Scene 3. Visually, it's wonderful, that long procession of torches going to the family tomb where Hero supposedly is buried. He takes out a scroll and he reads an epitaph. Done to death by slanderous tongues. It's just what I was talking about. Words in this play can kill. Slander is deadly. Slander can kill. The amount of slander that goes on out there now is beyond belief. I'll tell you the one that annoys me greatly at the moment, it won't stop, is this madness out there that Shakespeare didn't write his own plays. There's a new movie coming out about it, for heaven's sake, about how it was really the Earl of Oxford. And excuse me, that's slander. Everybody who is spreading that is guilty of a very serious sin. Shakespeare will survive it. But those who are spreading this lie are doing a grave injustice to a great artist. Here, the slander has killed. Done to death by slanderous tongues was the hero that here lies. Death in guerdon of her wrongs gives her fame that never dies. The fame of her honesty will outlive the slander done against her. So the life that died with shame lives in death with glorious fame. Hang thou there upon the tomb, praising her when I am dumb. And Claudio stops speaking. The appropriate reaction now is silence. Okay, now, then comes the song. Sing your solemn hymn, he says. Pardon, goddess of the night. Goddess of the night, Diana, goddess of the moon. Understand, very important, understand. Shakespeare could not mention at length the faith on stage. Shortly after this play was written, any reference to God was banished from the stage, okay? So the constant invocation, and this goes on through the rest of his career, of God has to be the gods, and it's masked behind the classical tradition. There are a few exceptions, but only a few, okay? Pardon, goddess of the night, Diana, the virgin goddess of the moon. Those that slew thy virgin night, K-N-I-G-H-T. It's a visual rhyme. It sounds exactly the same. And please notice, I'm going to come back to this. The vision of the young virgin is of a knight. Someone who goes out and fights for the good in public. How? Not by wielding the sword, but with what? Virginity. Pardon, goddess of the night, those that slew thy virgin knight, for the which with songs of woe round about her tomb they go. Midnight assist our moan, help us to sigh and groan, heavily, heavily, graves yawn and yield your dead, till death be uttered, heavily, heavily. It's an act of penance, but there is a recognition there that becomes the key recognition in the play, and the solution to the problem posed by the earlier song in the play. There is one way to keep men decent, honest, upright, moral, committed, at home, and to keep the society ordered, and that is the honesty and goodness of the women. So that the plot of this play is the acting out of an idea that Shakespeare takes very seriously. And it gives the only possible answer to the question posed by Margaret Mead. What do we do with the men? It's very simple. You introduce them to good women who will therefore make them be good men. Because good women produce good men. And where does the goodness of the woman begin? With the virgin. The model for all women. Purity and innocence and devotion and love and self-sacrifice. And those things then call forth the absolute best in the man. Because he is there for one reason, and that is to live up to her goodness and her greatness. And if she is pure, honest, innocent, loving, sacrificing, then he will be as well. And if that is entailed in the coming of marriage that is sanctified, then when she gives up that virginity, it is for the good of children, the family, and in his eyes, she is still as good as she always was. Now, for this reason, the villain of the piece is Don John, who was a bastard. Where does the trouble start? The trouble starts with the fact we have brother against brother at the opening of this play, but it is not just two brothers. I'm going to talk about that tonight with As You Like It. Very different. It is the legitimate heir who has been challenged by the illegitimate heir. At some point, their father went carousing. And in going carousing, he produced an illegitimate son that is filled with bitterness, that is filled with anger, that is filled with hatred for his brother, who is outside the social order, and is not content to just accept his place, the role given to him in the world. He wants to attack and destroy. And what does he particularly want to attack and destroy? Claudio's decent love for Hero and Hero's reputation as a pure woman. He hates it. And that's what he attacks. Because he knows if he can destroy that, there will be no marriage. There will be no future. There will be no society. He can bring the whole thing down. Before the play opens, he tries to do it with weapons. And he loses to the might of his brother and the other soldiers who go out to fight for Don Pedro. But having lost that battle, he becomes more insidious, and he'll bring it down a different way. Through lies, through corruption, through slander. And the slander is directed at what? The good, pure woman. If he can destroy that, he knows the whole thing is over. Now, I'm going to turn to the moment. The shattered wedding is shocking, okay? If comedy is supposed to end with marriage, we have that moment. We're getting the marriage scene. The two young people are coming together. The friar is there. We should have the joy. We can't. Why? Because there's a lie at the center of it that's been promulgated. And those two young people, Hero does not fully know her husband to be. He's about to prove it. But even worse, Claudio has believed a lie about Hero and bought it, believed it. And Don Pedro is there backing him up, believing what the lie that is that his brother, his bastard brother told him. And the wedding is shattered. It's horrifying. Especially as Hero has no understanding of what's happened, and she is being accused. And when the accusation comes, there, Leonardo, take her back again. Give not this rotten orange to your friend. That which should be pure and good is rotten. She's but the sign and semblance of her honor. Behold, how like a maid she blushes. Human beings are the only creatures that blush. When one blushes, that's a sign of something good inside. Okay? Oh, what authority and show of truth can cunning sin cover itself with all? Comes not that blood as modest evidence to witness simple virtue? Would you not swear, all you that see her, that she were a maid by these exterior shows? He is claiming it is not true what they're looking at. Inside is corrupt. She is none. She knows the heat of a luxurious bed. Her blush is guiltiness, not modesty. You seem to me as Diana in her orb. There it is again, the goddess of the moon, purity, chastity. As chaste as is the bud ere it be blown, but you are more intemperate in your blood than Venus or those pampered animals that rage in savage sensuality. You're an animal. No, the father of Don Pedro and Don John was the animal. It's the earlier generation that has passed this on down. It is the sins of the father being visited on the sons. And now landing on the young innocent girl. The wedding is destroyed. Her own father loses faith in her, believes what's been said. Please notice, two people believe in her. Number one, the friar. The friar in this play is one of Shakespeare's great Catholic characters. There is a friar in an earlier play who comes up with a scheme and it is destructive. Romeo and Juliet, Friar Lawrence, who out of personal cowardice will not go to Lord Capulet and say, I married your daughter. She is married. You can't marry her to Paris. I should have told you. I should have been forthright. I did it in secret. Maybe I was wrong, but the burden's not on her. It's on me. Instead, he says, I'll give you a sleeping potion. You can pretend to die, go in the tomb, and then I'll let Romeo know, and then he can come, and then you can be together, then you can run off together. Friar Lawrence is a flawed man who makes a terrible decision. This friar is a good friar and has clear insight. Hear me a little, for I've only been silent so long and given way under this course of fortune by noting of the lady. He's watched this young girl. I have marked 1,000 blushing apparitions to start into her face. 1,000 innocent shames in angel whiteness beat away those blushes. And in her eye there hath appeared a fire to burn the errors that these princes hold against her maiden truth. Call me a fool, trust not my reading nor my observations, which with experimental seal doth warrant the tenor of my book. Trust not my age, my reverence, calling, my divinity, if this sweet lady lie not guiltless here under some biting error. She is innocent, says the friar. And trust me by what? Trust not my age, reverence, calling, divinity. It's magnificent. And he comes up with a simple plan, not a huge scheme. But notice again, it's an echo of the Romeo and Juliet mistake. Pretend to be dead. Not so he can get out from something, but so that Claudio will feel shame. Because the friar believes there's goodness and innocence in this girl. He's the first. The second, this is beautiful. Benedict is talking to Beatrice. Benedict says, I'm so attired in wonder, I know not what to say. Beatrice says, oh, on my soul, my cousin is belied. The friar and Beatrice. The good friar and the good woman who says, my cousin's been wrong. That's not true. How does she know? Because she knows her. Cannot be true. And then comes one of the great scenes Shakespeare ever wrote. They agree to put the story out that Hero is dead. They listen to what the friar says. Everyone leaves the broken marriage. And we have that beautiful scene of Beatrice and Benedict together. Lady Beatrice, have you wept all this while? Yea, and I will weep a while longer. This is on page 57, by the way, in your book. Let's follow through the scene. Crucial, crucial here. Not just to the play, but to Shakespeare's whole vision of the world. Benedict, I will not desire that. Stop weeping. Stop crying. Okay, but please notice. What does the good woman do when she sees a severe injustice and wrong? She stands by and weeps. And again, the image of our Blessed Mother is right there. You stand and watch and weep. Yea, and I will weep a while longer. Benedict says, surely I do believe your fair cousin is wronged. He joins the side of the friar and Beatrice, not his old friends and soldier buddies. This is an enormous step. Why does he do it? Because he loves Beatrice. She is a good woman, and he trusts her. And at this point, he's come to trust the friar. There's something higher than military might. It's the faith. He's going beyond the soldier and looking at something higher. And he's believing this woman that he now has come to love. Okay? Ah, how much might the man deserve of me that would write her? And please notice here, the first thing the woman does is weep. Second thing is, somebody set it right. There's injustice in the world. Set it right. Is there any way to show such friendship? A very even way, but no such friend. May a man do it? It is a man's office, but not yours. Kaboom! Yes, it's something that a man must do, but you can't do it. You're no man. Now, there's been trouble before the two of them, between the two of them before. This is usually overlooked. I'm just going to do this very quickly here. Earlier conversation. Lady, come, you have lost the heart of Senior Benedict. It's right before the party. Indeed, my lord, he lent it me a while, and I gave him use for it, a double heart for his single one. There was something that went on between them. There was an attachment. Hers was double his, a double heart for his single one. But now she's talking playing cards, okay? Mary, once before he won it of me with false dice. He won my heart, but it turned out not to be true. It was false. Men were deceivers ever. Therefore, your grace may well say I have lost it. She does not trust him. She does not trust him. Notice what he does immediately. The next line, I do love nothing in the world so well as you. Is not that strange? His response when she says, you're not a man, is, I do love you. Sort of weird. Sort of weird, I know, but I do love you. And then she admits, well, yeah, I guess, yes, 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 I love you too. By my sword, Beatrice, thou lovest me. Do not swear and eat it. Meaning make an oath and then forget it. I will swear by it that you love me, and I will make him eat it that says I love not you. Will you not eat your word with no sauce that can be devised to it? I protest I love thee. Why then, God forgive me. She's afraid she may be doing something wrong in trusting him a second time. What offense, sweet Beatrice. You have stayed me in a happy hour. I was about to protest I loved you and do it with all your heart. I love you with so much of my heart that none is left to protest. Yes, I do love you. Oh, because I don't know if you're a man. So Benedict says, basically, I'll prove it. Come, bid me do anything for thee. It's one of the two most powerful words in all of drama. Kill Claudio. Ha, not for the wide world. You kill me to deny it. Farewell. Now, please notice what's going on here. Clearly, she's overstating. Right? But what is she calling on him to do? There is chaos out there. Moral chaos, social chaos. Your friend caused it. If you're a man, clean up Dodge City. put on your gun belt, fill the gun with bullets, get out there and clean up this mess, if you're a man. Kill Claudio. Ugh. His response, not for the world. You kill me to deny it. Farewell. Then that's it. And she's not just being snotty or selfish. There can be no future for them as a couple in a marriage if this is allowed to continue. How can there be marriage after this shattered marriage? What will marriage ever mean again? So what, there'll be a lovey-dovey, low, I love you, I love you too, I love you, I love you, and 6 months later, bam, they're gone again. Men were deceivers ever. You love me, you prove that love. And how do you prove love? How does a real man prove his real love to a good, decent, honorable, innocent, virtuous woman? He sees to it that virtue is established in the world so they can be married and raise a family together. You clean up the mess if you're a man. You don't let it continue. Because unless you do, there will be no society. There will be no marriages. Tarry, sweet Beatrice. I am gone, though I am here. There is no love in you. Beatrice, in faith I will go. We'll be friends first. You dare easier be friends with me than fight with mine enemy? Oh yeah, we can be friends, but meanwhile, my enemy's going to prevail out there? Is Claudio thine enemy? Is he not approved in the height of villain that hath slandered, scorned, dishonored my kinswoman? She's absolutely right. Absolutely. She is using language appropriately. Oh, that I were a man! What? Bear her in hand until they come to take hands, and then with public accusation, uncovered slander, unmitigated rancor, oh God, that I were a man, I would eat his heart in the marketplace. Now the problem is this, if there are no men and the women are unleashed, whoosh, as the great Kipling poem has it, the female of the species is deadlier than the male. Look out. Look out. Because if that whole thing collapses, even in trying to do the right and good, they will go beyond where they need to be. And in doing wrong, they'll end up killing their own children in the womb. If there are no men. This is the most modern play ever written. This says more to our time than any editorial ever penned. Because it's not a matter of, it's just a terrible thing, you shouldn't do it. How do you solve it? How did we get here? And how do you solve it? You need men. Hear me, Beatrice. Talk with a man out at a window of property. Nay, but Beatrice, sweet hero, she is right. Now please notice, she's a woman. Women tend to get emotional. The emotion is honest, it is justified, and when they get emotional, they tend to talk. And he can't get a word in. But what she is saying is correct. Sweet hero, she is wrong. She is slandered. She is undone. Beatrice, he doesn't even get her name out. Princes and counties. Surely a princely testimony. A goodly count. Count Comfect. A sweet gallant. Surely he's a little sugar prince. He's a little piece of candy. Count Claudio. Oh, that I were a man for his sake, or that I had any friend would be a man for my sake. But manhood is melted into curtsies, valor into compliment, and men are only turned into tongue and trim ones too. Girly boys. All we have left are little girly boys. Very sensitive males. No, I think guns are terrible and there shouldn't be any guns, and I don't think anyone should ever fight, and I think we can just sit down and discuss this amicably and reach a happy solution. Oh, no, no, I don't. I think there should be no war because war is evil. No, 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 I don't want to fight because because fighting is bad and people get hurt. If the first week when the Supreme Court issued that demonic decree, every man had gone out and seen that no woman got into a clinic, and that, now we have to be proper here, Every doctor had his fingers broken. Not killed, fingers broken. Which means no more money to be made. You know, you can't even use a thermometer. Would have stopped in a week. But manhood is melted into curtsies, valor into compliment, and men are only turned into tongue. Now, I don't approve of that at all. I think it's a terrible thing. And trim ones too. He is now as valiant as Hercules, that only tells a lie and swears it. I cannot be a man with wishing. I can't be a man. Therefore, I will die a woman with grieving. And we're back to the weeping. We're back to the grief. And again, what it means is she knows what a woman is. And a woman who is a real woman and an honest woman and a good woman and a true woman and an upright woman and a demanding woman will produce real men. Terry Good Beatrice, by this hand I love you. Use it for my love some other way than swearing by it. Think you in your soul the Count Claudio hath wronged Hero? Yea, as sure as I have a thought or a soul. And this is more than a social issue. Shakespeare makes clear this has a supernatural dimension. Benedict, enough. I am engaged. I will challenge you. Yes! Finally, he's become a man. Finally, he's worthy of her love. Now, please notice, he does not go out rambunctiously and take his gun from the jaguar and fire 13 bullets at Claudia. He goes public, he accuses him of the wrongs he has done, and says, we will meet. Okay? You choose, we will meet. I will stand up to you. I won't take this time to defend dueling. It's a very old-fashioned notion and quite out of favor. But talk to me privately sometime. And please be aware, Shakespeare is aware of it. I'll talk more about it tomorrow with Twelfth Night. Those two poor creatures facing each other were horrified. The set-up duel where neither one of them is a man or willing to duel. Until suddenly the good captain comes in and just starts whipping everybody. And says, he's aware of it. There's a lot of that going on in here. It shows, it pops up in these plays. Enough, I am engaged, I will challenge him. But please notice the other thing he does. He withdraws from the service of Don Pedro. He thanks him. He is a gentleman. He thanks you. He thanks him but says, I can no longer be in your company. I'm a man now. I've committed to someone else. I've committed to another human being who's better than you are. And I will trust her before I trust you. She is guiding me up to something better. There is no accident Shakespeare named this woman Beatrice. Ding, 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 ding. Ah. The woman who leads the man upward. Ding, 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 ding. That other great and glorious Beatrice. This is on the social level. But the end is the same. The ultimate end is the same. And as the beautiful Beatrice makes a man of Dante, Beatrice makes a man of Benedict. And they have much in common. Now, one last thing, and I'll wrap up with this. There is the very interesting trick played by Leonardo and his brother Antonio on Claudio. Claudio is, to his credit, humiliated when he discovers what he's done. Okay? He kneels before the father of his betrothed, whom he believes he has killed, and offers to do penance. The penance is in two parts. You go to the tomb, you publicly proclaim her innocence. Okay? Number two, you marry my brother's daughter, okay? And though you cannot be my son-in-law, okay, be my nephew. And the wedding comes, and the women come out all veiled. Now, Claudio has agreed to it. He kneels before her and makes the offer to marry her and then says, let me see your face. And Leonardo says, no. No. Not until you agree. It's the other way. He said, no, not until you agree. And then Claudio kneels. Makes the proposal. He doesn't know what's behind that veil. Okay? He's been told she's as attractive as Hero was, but he doesn't know it. And father and uncle can see beauties where the rest of the world can't. He doesn't know what's behind that veil. But what he is doing is submitting to the authority of the older generation. It is no longer his own call. If he fought, if he fell in love with Hero on his own account because his heart went pit-a-pat, pit-a-pat, he is now agreeing to a marriage arranged by the previous generation and saying, I will be content with this. I will be happy with this. I will do it, whoever she is, whatever she looks like. I will trust those who came before me. I will honor the obligations put on me by the earlier generation. I will submit my individuality and my individual will to the good of the social order that I have wronged. And what does he get in return? Hero. He gets back what he had lost. And please notice, this is something that will not happen again. We get a touch of it in Twelfth Night, but not as strong here until the last Shakespeare play. Having submitted to the earlier generation and honored what they told him and believing that is for a greater good and having suffered what he suffered and doing penance and trying to become a better man, he faces the resurrected body of the loved one he lost. If that's not hope, in a profound sense, if that's not the beauty of what the whole Catholic story teaches us, then what is? By finally doing what we are supposed to do and honoring those who came before us and submitting to the authority of those generations before us and trusting in them, what do we get? Those whom we loved and lost. I can no longer watch the comedies without weeping. I can't do it. The implications go beyond just joy in this world. They are higher. And there's a wonderful line in As You Like It, where one of the characters, one of the lovely characters, says, it is better to weep at joy than to joy at weeping. Because the promise of that ending is extraordinary. What also happens? They finally get together. Beatrice and Benedict finally get together. Benedict did not have to go all the way to proving himself a man. Shakespeare works it out ahead of time. But he was willing to do so, and he has become a man. And boy, does he get a good woman. It won't be a quiet marriage. But it will be glorious and wonderful, and imagine the children those two will produce. Absolutely beautiful. And then something I saw today for the first time ever. I've taught this play dozens and dozens of times. And this is the glory of coming back to the great classics. We're about to celebrate. We have the dance. We have the marriages. We have our happy ending, and suddenly, in comes Don John. We caught him. We captured him. But please notice, it is not Don Pedro, the brother who fought him and won. Benedict turns and says to Don Pedro, think not on him till tomorrow. Today's a day of joy. Today's a day of celebration. I'll devise the brave punishments for him. and it becomes Benedict who is finally the sentencing judge on Don John. It's not Don Pedro. Why Benedict? Because he's become the man in the piece. He has reestablished the moral order, and he will now hand out judgment and justice. But tomorrow, and the play ends with, strike up pipers and we dance. It is a wonderful comedy. It is a joyful comedy. It is a deep and rich comedy. And it may seem strange, but the fact of the matter is, and it's because it's by a great artist, given extraordinary gifts by God, who use those gifts to a wonderful end, it's a serious comedy. But at the end, strike up pipers, let's all get married and dance, even if the marriage is, for all of us old bachelors, something higher and different than the joy of a wedding in this world. See you tonight. I'll talk about As You Like It, and tonight I'll leave time to answer questions. All right? Thank you all very much.
The Son and Holy Ghost, amen. Glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Ghost.
As it was in the beginning, is now, and shall be world without
end. Saint Thomas Aquinas,
pray for us.
The Father, and the Son, and the Holy Ghost, amen.